There's a hammering upstairs, so if you hear that, our apologies. I don't know what they're doing. Jose says they're fixing something, but I feel like they're always hammering something in here.
I don't know, yeah. It seems like... Well, we'll just not go with the comment that was
there
in my head. Yeah.
All right,
We'll be prudent about that.
Right out of the gates. Yeah. They crashed in the monastery. Welcome back to All Good in the Brotherhood podcast. I am Brother Francisco, and joined with me today is a good friend and fellow monk, brother of mine, Brother Jose Rosa. I stress like the Hispanic pronunciation because it's super ironic. Someone once said, like, wow, with such a Hispanic name, Jose's kind of like one of the whiter monks in the community.
Yes, indeed. I have no Hispanic blood within me, to be honest. My last name actually comes from Hungarian, Roja. It's like the Z and the S in the Hungarian actually form like a French J.
Oh, okay.
And when my great-grandfather came over to the United States in 1912, whoever was at Ellis Island just really screwed it up. So
there you go.
It's okay. We got Rosa with like the hard Z sound, but it's spelled with R-O-S-A.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not really one to talk. My name's also Francisco. And like, yeah, as you can see, whiteness. So Brother Jose and I have known each other for quite a while, actually, almost going back 10 years. Mm-hmm. We both graduates of St. Vincent. I was actually Jose's overnight host when he was a senior in high school and I was a freshman in college. Took him to Vespers that first day he visited.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, since then, we've had our ups and downs as friends.
Yes.
But now we are been living together in the monastery for going on 5 years now, right?
So, yeah, it's crazy to think it's been that long, both in terms of how long we've known each other, and that was 10 years ago. That's weird to say that.
Yeah.
But then also that it's been 5 years since being a monk.
Right.
Wow, this is crazy.
Well, I was reflecting the other day. I was talking to Father Cashin, and he was talking about like the transition of like you, me, and Bosco coming from the college into the monastery. And I realized I've been a monk for longer than I was a college student. And it's just kind of weird to think. Really happy to have Jose on with us today. We're taking a step back into the integration and the unity of the psychological and the spiritual. So we had our wonderful, illustrious guest, and this is, I'm buttering her up because there's a joke that I'm, everyone, never mind. But Lauren Sharmer was back on in March where we talked about the integration of psychological and spiritual well-being. And to kind of to follow up on some of those discussions, I brought in Jose, who has done considerable research and work with a branch of psychology known as internal family systems, or IFS is the short for it. So let's just dive in. What are we even talking about? I did a psychology for spiritual direction course last semester, and we did talk about this, but not gonna lie, I audited the course, so I can't say I paid like hardcore attention all the time. I know trigger words like the fireman or like all these different things, but what got you interested and kind of what is it in general?
So yeah, what really got me interested, I would say, is I've been going to Father Boniface Hicks for spiritual direction for since I was a freshman in college, actually. And I can remember him whenever we would be first meeting, he would ask me questions, and he still does this, of course, too, where as we're having conversation and going really into the depths of my prayer life, my spiritual life, all the things that are going on, he'd often ask, well, how does it feel inside? But beyond that, he would say, you know, is there a part of you that feels that way? Or what are the parts like? And that got me curious as to why he kept coming back to that sense of parts. And I asked him one time, I was like, so is there a reason why you are bringing this up like this? Just like the parts language. I appreciate it. I really like it. I mean, it helps to give a vocabulary for me because I don't always feel all of me believes whatever I'm feeling, but there's still that part of me that does.
Yeah.
He said, oh, it's internal family systems. And he did explain a little bit then, but I also was in spiritual direction classes with him in the Institute for Ministry Formation, where we really went into it a little bit more. And internal family systems is this sub-branch of psychology. If you're familiar at all, maybe you're not, with family system psychology, where it's really looking at the interactions of different families.
Yes.
And in the families, like the different units of the different people, how you know, the children and the parents and all that, how they interact, and also into the grandparents and things like that too. So it's each family is seen as these parts of these these components are part of the family. It's not just one whole thing. It's a family is made up of those parts. Internal family systems is taking that concept of, well, here's like the different parts of one family and applying that to the individual. It's a theory of subpersonalities, which in the realm of psychology, you know, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a psych major myself, but in the research that I have done, subpersonalities go back quite a ways. I mean, people like Sigmund Freud and now even like Jordan Peterson, different psychologists have different ideas of subpersonalities. Not everything is the id, ego, superego, perhaps, but even again, that concept of what makes us whole as individuals is not just this whole monolithic, well, that's the word I'll use because that's what just came to my head, but that whole kind of concrete, one form fits all sort of thing. What makes each of us unique, but also what makes each of us whole is the fact that there are different things happening within us, right? And perhaps we feel this where we could be having a really good day and things are going really well and we're feeling very joyful and we're feeling very calm at the same time too. And perhaps either somebody says something or we see something that triggers a memory and there's a lot of frustration. Maybe there's anger there. Or perhaps we're doing the same sort of thing. We're going along doing whatever. Again, calm, courteous. And maybe something triggers our memory and there's pain. And we're still happy. We would still say that we're happy, but there's that part of us that feels like sad, feels hurt. Internal family systems gives a vocabulary to these different parts. And it literally uses the word parts to describe these different things that are going on within us. Dr. Peter Malinowski, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I listen to his podcast sometimes.
And he's a good friend of Father Boniface, and he's over at, especially at soulsandhearts.org, great organization, great Catholic organization. He describes internal family systems as the way of describing these different parts, and these different parts are sub-personalities that are within us that each has its own image of God, each has its own experience of the world, each has its own love language, each has its own haunts and hurts and desires. And all of them, good, bad, parts that are really like really joyful, parts that maybe carry a lot of the weight and the shame, everybody wants to be seen, known, and loved. And IFS, internal family systems, we have, first of all, what we call the self. And the self is basically that part of us that we could describe as like when we're at our best, right? We're calm, we're creative, we're courteous. It's called the eight C's, and unfortunately, I don't remember all eight off the top of my head. But you know, again, when we are at our best, not only are we nice to ourselves, we could say we're nice to other people, and like there's a part of us that's really outgoing, and it's we're confident in what we're doing, we're confident in ourselves. We don't have to question whatever is going on, and again, we could honestly say that's us at our best. And when the self, we call it blending, when the self is blended just in itself and it's running the show, we could say. It's kind of like a conductor that's orchestrating and moving the different parts of the orchestra. And you know, the string section is doing its thing and it's not overpowering the woodwinds. And the woodwinds are not overpowering the brass. The brass is not overpowering the percussion. Nobody's overpowering everybody, but they're creating this beautiful symphony.
Yeah.
But there are times in our life, we all know this, that trauma happens. And yes, we could use capital T trauma, you know, that thing that, you know, whatever is going on in our life that happens, that we have those experiences of trauma. But also I would even say that there's sometimes like those lowercase T traumas of like just day-to-day things that
affect us,
weigh on us, affect us, things like that. There's parts of us, again, going into this parts language, which we call exiles in IFS language, that those are the parts of us that whenever those, what we say, bad things happen, those negative emotions, the shame, things that we can't control, those exiles hold on to those emotions. And they're exiles because nobody really enjoys, you know, feeling pain, so right? It's much easier to push it away.
Send them away.
Yeah. Not even worry about it. Try not to worry about it. So the exiles are exiled. And because they're negative, because oftentimes they, in their negativity and that negative emotion, they threaten to break out into everything else that we do in our life. They can affect our relationships. Mm-hmm. They can affect our prayer life. They can affect what we do for our jobs and our occupation, our vocations. Often they break out and we don't really know how to control them when they do break out, because they really want to be seen. They want to be known. They want to be loved. And there's a couple different ways that we can try and control these things, or at least ways that we think that we can control these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the protectors. So we have exiles is that one big group. Protectors is that other big group. And they're there to protect us. They're there to protect us from harm.
Mm-hmm.
They're there to protect us from feeling that negative energy, that negative emotion, whatever is going on. And we could break those protectors into two different groups of protectors themselves. So that first major group would be managers. And managers are the parts of us that keep us really busy, keep us very occupied. It's part of kind of like the choleric side of things, or the very scheduling of like, okay, you got to do this, 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 got to be over here for this long, do these things. But also it tends to be that managers are very demanding. So the manager part perhaps is telling us, telling you, whatever, whoever, you know, in our own experiences, that you got to do all these things. You got to be prepared. You got to get all this stuff, but you can't do it as good as you would like it to be. It's never satisfied, that manager that comes in. And let's be honest, you know, the exile is a part of ourselves.
And
we want to push it away. We kind of want to seal it away, not have to worry about it. But you can't push part of yourself away from yourself as if you could hermetically seal it away and just kind of lock it in a corner and never have to worry about it again. No matter how many times we try to do that, that part of us is going to push through, because in the end, its need to be heard and to be understood is going to outweigh anything else that we do. And, you know, we could respond to it in a healthy way, or we could continue to push it away. And if we continue to push it away, when it risks breaking through and causing serious issues,
blow up
and everything, then we get the other group of protectors that step in, the firefighters.
Mm.
And the firefighters, it's all about dissociation. It has nothing to do with, is it nice? Is it pretty? sometimes is it legal? It's all about, I am overwhelmed with negative emotion. I don't want to have to worry about it. I'm not looking to be pretty. I'm just looking to douse everything out. I want to feel nothing. Not even, I don't want to feel negative. I don't want to feel anything.
Wow.
And that's, so, you know, we could think of things like drugs, pornography, and sex. But even things like overeating, overworking, over-exercising, anything that we use as that distraction coping. That can be a protector, is a coping mechanism. One of those big coping mechanisms, actually, that is a protector that sometimes people are surprised by is anger actually is a protector, and it is a firefighter. Because if you think about it, when we get angry, we feel this energy. We feel this rush of energy in this. We sense the injustice of whatever's going on. Maybe it's legitimate injustice. Maybe it's illegitimate. But anyway, we still feel that injustice. We sense this energy that courses through us that in its best way is meant to help us correct whatever's unjust, to make it just. But sometimes doing what we would want to do is not socially acceptable. If someone says something to you, and or let's say something is happening and you're you hear something that you don't like, but let's say you're in church, you can't just in the middle of a homily or in the middle of like the Eucharistic prayer be like, you know, because that's that would not be appropriate. People would look at you being like, what's that guy's problem?
It would be kind of fun though.
Sometimes it would be, I have to agree, but you know, sometimes it's not acceptable. And also too, I think we live in a culture that we're kind of, how should I put it, schizophrenic in a lot of ways.
I think we're
schizophrenic in the sense that we are told often you have to be a certain way, you have to do certain things, and by doing those certain things you can't feel anything. But then also we're told you have to feel everything to the point where you can't even have sometimes an objective conversation with someone of like, well,
I feel this way. I feel this way, right?
And like in trying to discuss with someone, like, okay, like what's the best course of action? How can we be better? How, like, we don't want to stay in this place. We want to acknowledge, first of all, that we need to be in this place. But in trying to help people sometimes work out of that, I've encountered a number of times where people are just really content staying in that negative space. And if you try to help them out of it, walk with them, they're just really resistant. So, and they don't learn that from nowhere, right? Like that comes from their experience. That comes from something. So I find that as a culture, we're not really all that good at being able to express our anger. Mm-hmm. We're not really good at being able to express these negative emotions. It's much easier for us to internalize them, bottle them in, so that often enough they do become those issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I could like just speak into that and have a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely using anger as kind of a numb of everything else, I totally can convict myself of that.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly when I'm upset at myself for something that I have done.
Mm.
All the negative emotions or feelings of shame, for like, wow, how could you do this yet again? Or worried about how people perceive me or how they think about me. Instead of focusing them on myself, I just create scenarios in my head that allows me to then be angry at people and project it on them. And now they're the problems. They're the ones who have caused everything. And I just kind of pour out that anger. And the anger kind of feels powerful. Mm-hmm. And I imagine like, oh, being able to bite back at someone with this phrase, or you know, if I'm in a particularly angry, violent mood, you know, beating the heck out of them, whatever it is. We're monks, we're people too, just putting that out there.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, so – And it totally makes sense, and it numbs everything else, right? Because now I don't feel bad about myself because I'm like, oh, well, I'm better than them. I'm not focused on the things that I regret. I'm focused on how much more I could overpower someone else, right? I didn't have control there, but now I could have control over this person. I could have control over this situation. I remember when – my professor for this particular class was Dr. Gary Crete, who works very closely with Dr. Peter Molinowski about the internal family system and things. And I remember when he was describing like the firefighter and the way he responds, I'm like, oh, well, that's me 100%. Some parts are bigger than others or take prominence for longer periods of time than usually they ought. But we also get so used to them that a problem can be is in, like in our minds, we reduce a part of us to like all of who we are. Mm-hmm. Or we get so used to living out of that part that that's just what we normalize. And we kind of forget, particularly the exiles, the ones that feel more like the child kind of part of us that is very easily scarred or very easily traumatized. Or the deeper part of us, it's like those get so pushed away, so fought against that we lose connection with them. And that's the problem can result is if we finally tap back into those, we can like fall apart. So just to kind of to speak back into those concepts of exiles, are the protector parts of us like responses to exiles? Like when we see them kind of coming up or something happens to us, are there protectors to like jump back and say, no, we don't want you? Or is it kind of as in like an aggressive negative response, or are some of them like, is it positive at times for protectors to kind of say, okay, yeah, you're feeling what you're feeling, but we can't let you overpower like the whole system, everyone here, because if you do, then you're just a mess. And then second question, how is this not like, and I understand you specified sub personalities, but how is this not just like saying everyone has multiple personality disorder? Because it sounds like, okay, I act this way here, I act this way here, I'm like that all the time. What do you think about that?
So yeah, to that first question, I think that I think it's a both and. Honestly,
okay.
I think that the desire of the protectors, some of them would honestly like if you really sat down and really sat with whatever that part of you that is feeling that and really engaged in conversation with it, allow it to speak, because it's not just the exiles that want to be seen, known, and loved. It's also the protectors too. All parts of us want to, and I know in my own experience, like working with some of my own managers and really engaging with those parts of myself, in a sense, allowing them to breathe, allowing them to rest and relax, like basically saying like, thank you. Because at the end of the day too, with IFS, one of the key principles is that there are no bad parts. There are no bad parts at all. The exiles are not bad. The protectors are not bad. The managers and the firefighters, none of these parts are bad. They're all good. They're meant to help us. They're what make us us, right? Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's really easy. We can look at the exiles and, like, acknowledge, yeah, like, those are not bad. They carry the negative emotion, all that stuff, but, like, in and of themselves are not bad. But even those managers, the ones that are very demanding and very particular, very you should be ashamed of yourself sometimes is what the manager might say. That manager is still good. the firefighter that's coming in, and maybe not necessarily because it's like pornography or something objectively sinful, but like that desire of like, I want to protect you so that you don't feel anything at all, because it's not good to feel anything right now because you're going to be overwhelmed. There's still a good desire there, right?
Yeah.
So when we think of like the managers, like when they're stepping in, sometimes the managers, especially when they're like really kicked into overdrive, and I had mentioned blending before, but when a part blends with the self so that we can't distinguish, is this the self? Is this this part? What all is going on? It also makes it complicated that all these things are hidden. So sometimes some parts are very easy and like obvious to understand. Yeah, yeah. And then there are plenty of others. The more that I've really worked on this with in therapy and in spiritual direction, other places too, just even my own work with myself, I recognize like, well, okay, there's a lot more going on than I thought there was. These different things that are going on, to be able to sit with them and just let them speak. And when they're really engaged, when that blending is like really solid, you can't really separate one from the other, it's going to sound sometimes like when you talk to that manager and you ask, do you hate the exile? It might say yes. But can we take a step back even from there and ask ourselves and engage with the self again to speak to that manager and say, like, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for wanting to help me. I'm sorry that this has been difficult for you. Like, I'm sorry. And sometimes, you know, I'm not about dissociative identity disorder, just letting you all know that, right? So I'm not schizophrenic. I'm not saying schizophrenia is a good thing, anything like that. And to that second question you said of like, you know, this is not an excuse of, you know, sometimes I feel this way, sometimes I feel that way, so I'm just going to feel whatever. Like, we're always striving to be the best that we can.
Yes.
Allowing ourselves to be touched by the Spirit of the Lord. And it is helpful to remember that, again, these are sub-personalities. This is not the wholeness of ourselves. Nor are these, like, split identities of, like, George is over here, Michael's over there, Shania's over there, you know, whatever, right? Yeehaw, indeed. You know, it is helpful to remember that. These different things are going on, and that these are a part of ourselves. And I like to identify these things with memories. And I like to identify these things also by like ages. Like what you had said too before of like, you know, perhaps there's like that little kid with part of us within ourselves. Often when I have gone to therapy and worked through it for myself, but also when I'm talking with students at our college and with others about internal family systems and the little ways that I can, I often encourage them, have been encouraged myself, okay, how old is this part? Who is it that's speaking right now?
Yeah.
What is he saying? What does he look like? What does he feel like? Where is he? Things like that. And that helps to remind me, again, this is not split identity. This is myself. This is myself.
Yeah.
But this isn't the fullness of myself. This is associated with a memory, associated with an experience, something that I learned as a result of something that happened to me. And I'll give an example too of this. So I think I've shared with you a couple times and I've shared with some people, but when I was in seventh, eighth grade, I was in Catholic school. I was in Boy Scouts, did a lot of good things. I'm an Eagle Scout. I'm also in the Order of the Arrow. If you know what that is, if you don't know what that is, go look it up. But did a lot of stuff with scouting and I loved it. Don't get me wrong. And really fundamental and formational for me, but I was bullied a lot in scouting in particular, but at school too, but especially in scouting. And sixth, seventh, eighth grade was just a really difficult time for me in a lot of ways. And I mean, I can remember going to scout trips and scout meetings and just a lot of verbal abuse, sometimes physical when I'd be on camping trips, just like kicked and punched and things like that. And I don't mean to shame anybody that did those things to me. You know, I don't know who's going to see this video, right? But like, I'm not here to shame anybody. I'm not here to do that. Not at all. You know, like what had happened has happened and there's pain there. Don't get me wrong. There's still pain that's there. Yeah, still stuff that I'm working through 10 years plus later, more than 10 years. But there are parts of me that are still 12, still 13, still 14, still wonder if I do this, you know, is someone going to come and kick me? Is someone going to come and say something? And maybe about a couple months ago, I was in spiritual direction and we were going through this and Father Boniface led me through an exercise and just there was this shame that was really coming up and really wondering like, again, the manager really came in and was like, you should be ashamed of yourself for letting this stuff happen. And that was like what all I was hearing. And I'm like, Father, like, I don't understand. Like, I know that I'm loved. I know it's not my fault. Like, I have that intellectual knowledge, but somehow the heart is not translating. So he was able to walk through it with me, and he said, okay, like, where are you right now? When you close your eyes, like, where are you with this part? It's like, well, I see I'm 12. I see I'm like kind of curled up in a corner, afraid. I see that I don't necessarily want to take a step out to do something because I don't know what's going to happen to me. And he asked me, so what is that part? What does it want you to say? What does it want you to hear? And I sat for a moment and thought about it and just let that part percolate up. And I recognized that it wanted to tell me, like, I'm sorry that you went through that. And there was a lot of weight that it was holding, a lot of pain that it was still holding. And these are things that, you know, I had talked about before in spiritual direction. I talked about in therapy, like things that I'd worked through. And there's a lot of healing that had already come in my life from these places, a lot of forgiveness. And yet there was still like hurt there. And in the midst of this, you know, I just kind of let this part of me, like in my imagination, really run with it, you know, and see where it was going. And, you know, I noticed that my chest, I felt like that anxiety kind of building up again. So I was like, okay, just take deep breaths, know that we're okay. I could feel that protector starting to come in a little bit of just, you know, shut down, shut down, shut down. No, it's okay. Like, we're okay. We're in a safe place. We're surrounded by our spiritual director. The Lord is with us here. Like, it's okay. And as I continued to let that go and was really engaged in those memories and just allowed my imagination to work there, I did encounter the Lord too. Like, Jesus was at that room that I was in, that I was hiding in a corner. And he saw me, and I saw him in that imagination come to me. He reached out and he held me in a hug, held me in an embrace, and let me know that it's not my fault. It's okay that I feel pain. It's okay. That's a very healthy reaction. You were hurt. You were verbally and physically like beaten up. Thank goodness that you felt that pain, because I would be concerned if you didn't. And I just, it was as if he wrapped me up in a hug, and I just remember being in spiritual direction and just like bawling my eyes out. Because that little boy, that 12-year-old boy, just, he was not being heard. And then he was heard. And there was freedom there. And there was peace there. And that blending stopped. And the self, myself, was able to engage with all of me. That calmness came back. That creativity and courage came back. The connectedness of being able, knowing that I had shared that with my spiritual director, but also that that part of me, it wanted to be heard. It was heard. And it's still, you know, it's not one of those things of like, we let it be heard once and that's it.
Right.
It always wants to engage with us. Those, especially those exiles, are very sensitive when other things come up that remind them of, okay, this already happened. Be aware of that. So in our daily life, there's all kinds of things that might happen to us that engage these parts, that trigger parts of these things. And self-knowledge is a beautiful thing. It is so necessary in the Christian life. And it's so necessary in our faith. Because all these things that happen to us, you know, maybe somebody who goes into spiritual direction for the first time and doesn't really know too much thinks, oh, we're only here to talk about prayer. But it's true that we have to talk about and be open with a human element.
All of us, who
all
we are.
Of everything. Like, my relationship with the Lord is based upon and is affected by that, those interactions that I had in 6th, 7th, 8th grade in scouting, right? And the pain and the experience and the questioning of sometimes, like, Lord, where were you in that moment? He, you know, that affects me even to today of, like, maybe some difficult things happening in the monastery. Not like that at all, but, like, you know, maybe somebody says something or looks at me the wrong way at a moment where I'm really frustrated and I'm like, grr. And then I might ask myself, like, Lord, where are you? And that's that same echoing question that I had asked before. And that 12-year-old part of me is afraid. And allowing the Lord to speak into that space and remind me again, I was there and I'm here now. Self-knowledge helps us with that. It is so, we cannot become saints without knowing ourselves.
Yeah, because I mean, so many of the saints talk about, until we have self-knowledge,
we will never be able to accept ourselves to it. I think is so integral as part of this like parts work, is that coming to know yourself so that you accept all of who you are in its different facets, in its different relationships, to then also understand that it is God first who accepted and claimed us. And then once we are fully able to accept who we are, we can then give ourselves to mm-hmm. other people. Because we can't give what we don't have, right? And if we don't have mm-hmm. a love for ourselves, how could we really authentically love all of who other people are, right? Instead, we love most of them, or what we like about them, right? Because, well, I love what I like about me. And I remember my own experience in spiritual direction. Father Tom doesn't necessarily do like parts work so mm-hmm, obviously, mm-hmm. but I remember there was one point, I think maybe near the end of my third year in the monastery, so second year of the juniorate, I had gone through like a lot of up and downs and kind of changes of, not total changes of personality, but definitely like kind of leaning much more towards kind of a like ultra stoic, kind of like emotionless mm-hmm. Facade that was definitely pushing back a lot of kind of the places I did want to think and feel about. But it came to a head. I remember specifically when I was talking to Bosco about some of these things, and he said, you know, honestly, he said, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to be behind the bush. I don't necessarily know if I've loved the person you've become. He said, I'm not saying that in like to like accuse you of anything, but he said, you're not the same person you were when you entered the monastery. He said, I loved Francisco then. He said, it's not that I don't love you now, but you don't seem like to have like the joy and the authenticity that you used to have. And then reflecting back on that, I remember telling Father Tom, it's like, you know what's true? I actually genuinely hate like the part of me that is like putting itself out there, that's saying like I'm aloof to everyone, or that like I can be strong and I don't have to worry about X, Y, and Z. That is the part that has taken such command over my life the last couple of years, and I detest it now. And he said, well, don't say that, but also don't let that part look, you know, take over again and say, well, I hate all these other things about you. And that was super helpful for me to understand that, okay, so this kind of desire to appear like I don't need emotional support from other people, or that I can kind of be independent and get taken care of stuff all on my own, will be always the predominant part of me. Like it will always strive to take control. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to hate that, because it has been extremely effective at times in my life. Yeah. Like it has gotten me way more successful at different times. I mean, I think this podcast continues to run because of a lot of that drive. I love you, Nate. But you know, we know. But at the same time, like I have been much more conscious and aware of when I feel anxiety in my life, or I feel very lonely, or whatever it is, that I can't just run away from that in this managerial kind of approach. And with that, coming to understand my relationship with Christ in all of who I am. So as you kind of mentioned, Christ coming to you and embracing you in that really childish maybe at times, certainly your childlikeness, him embracing you there, that it is Christ who first loved us and not just loved the best part of us, but loved all of who we are. And it is in coming to accept and understand that, then we can then turn to God. So you mentioned pretty early on that each of these parts can kind of give us a different vision of God, or can affect our relationship. So kind of maybe to shift, and you've already been talking about kind of this integration of spiritual by inference, but maybe to make it more even more obvious, how does this parts work, this internal family systems, really help the individual grow in a deeper, more full, authentic relationship with God when these parts are in harmony with one another? Because I'm sure at times when one is predominant, the view of God or how we believe God to look at us can be very marred, right? If we're in that experiencing some clear exilic moments, but then, you know, the firefighter comes to like numb everything, it could be like, well, God doesn't want me to, I can't approach God until all these things are taken care of, or until I don't worry about them, right? Because he doesn't want me to come to him looking like this. So I got to take care of all these things or shove them away, and then I can present myself to God, right? That's such a warped way of thinking, but I certainly do that all the time, especially when I'm like dwelling on my own sin. I'm like, well, I don't want to go pray Because if I don't want to look at God, why would he want to look at me? So yeah, how do these things incorporate together for relationship with God and how we come to see him and how we understand he sees us?
Well, I think it's important just right off the bat just to say that when we are blended with whatever part, exile, manager, firefighter, anything else, that is not who we fully are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, who we truly are at our core is who Jesus says that we are. He says that we are sons and daughters of the Father, that he came to redeem, he saved by shedding his blood upon the cross. And he calls us to sanctity. He calls us to sainthood by living a fundamental, moral, good Christian life. But, you know, when we are feeling all those things,
mm-hmm.
and as you said, like, you know, the exile feels one thing, the firefighter feels another, the manager feels another, those are valid expressions at the moment of, okay, this is how I feel. But at the end of the day, who God is not dependent upon any of those things or what we think those things should or shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, God is not going to reject any of those things a part of us, right? Like, he wants us as a total gift of ourselves.
Yeah.
He's not afraid. He's not ashamed of anything. So it's important to know that the exile, which is the thing that we want to push away the most, the worst exile that we think we have, whatever that is, God wants that. He's not afraid of it. He's not ashamed of it. He's not burdened by us surrendering that to him. The manager who wants to help us but ends up being very judgmental, very pushy, and very demanding, you know, there's a goodness to that manager, and God wants that. The firefighter that's there for dissociation as a means of just numbing everything because it's we don't want to feel that. We don't want to be overwhelmed. There's a goodness to that, and God loves that too. He doesn't love one part of us and despise another. He loves all of us. And I think it's really important that we can recognize that, and it does take time, right? You know, I think for myself, I was really always comfortable of like, okay, Lord, I'm really good at, I know I'm really good at academics. I know I'm really good at, I don't know, like public speaking or something like that, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I will give you these things because I know I'm good at them. But like the sinful stuff, no. Like we're going to keep that over here. Like you don't want that. I don't want that. We're just going to like tug it around the corner here and kick it under the rug. But to learn and to know, no, Jesus wants that. He saved that. If anything, that is the place of resurrection, those exiles. Those places that we want to put away, the places I want to tuck around and don't even want to look at, that is the place of greatest resurrection of the Lord, because those are the places that are most dead that need to come to life. And they do. They do. Even if I don't want the light to shine on them sometimes, the light is still there. And there is still redemption that is present and given to that, because it's given to me. And it's given to me with all of my joy, all my sarcasm, all of my pain, all of my sorrow, all of my frustration, everything, right? So it's helpful, I know, from the spiritual direction side of things, you know, when I'm meeting with students or I'm meeting with other people, when I'm interacting with them, just to come in right away with a mindset of, okay, whatever we're talking about, especially if they get more activated with like anger or frustration or something like that probably, maybe, most likely is not just them total, period, right? Like there's more to them than this. And it's the self may not be the part that I'm talking with right now. It might be a manager. It might be a firefighter. It might be a whole mix of different things that are happening really rapid fire that the person isn't even aware of. And it's helpful for me to remember that so that when I am talking, there's more compassion.
Yeah,
there's
more
understanding and patience. And but also recognizing that I have benefited greatly when I've gone to spiritual direction and had conversation with people that understand that. That when I am crazy and going through whatever is going on and can express, no matter how rapid fire or intense those emotions are, I know that the person across from me, if it's Father Boniface, if it's someone else, they know that there's more to the picture than just this, and that the Lord is not ashamed. And I think too, in what I was saying before of, you know, the Lord is not ashamed of any of these parts, and he wants all these parts to be in communion with him. One of the best ways that we can do that is to bring that in communion with other people. If we can bring that into relationship with a person who's in front of us, living, embodied, everything, right? You know, I know that you're here, you know that I'm here. So us being able to talk, there's something very concrete about that sharing.
Yes. Yeah.
That
yeah.
God is present to us, more present to us than we are to ourselves. But because the Father is not a body because Jesus is the Son, and but he's up in heaven, right? Like, yes, he's present to us in the Eucharist, but he's not talking to me like you and I are talking right now.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's a little bit harder to bring that into relationship with him. Sometimes it's hard and it's difficult, and some parts of us even really struggle to say that God is a person. They might think of him still as a thing. But when a person is in front of you, a human being is in front of you, and you can bring that into conversation, into relationship, have that cherished, have that held, have that protected, it's much easier than as you're processing through it with another person to then turn afterwards and be like, okay, Lord, here you are. Here I am.
Yeah.
I want to give this to you. I want to trust this to you. And it helps to give words perhaps to, you know, maybe sometimes we struggle. I know sometimes I struggle at times with, Lord, I want to give this to you. I just don't even know what to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
And talking with a person,
mm-hmm.
sometimes even better than journaling. Sometimes it's just talking with a person. I'm more of a external processor myself. Talking with someone, having that conversation, then I have the words to be, okay, Lord, this is what's going on.
Yes, right.
Give it to him, and he just takes it from there and runs with it.
Mm.
But all those things, I think, are so important. And just knowing, at the end of the day, if there's anything that anybody takes away from this or whatever, right? Like, you know, I hope that all of this is beneficial for whoever is listening. But to know that there are no bad parts, and to know that God wants all of you.
Mm-hmm.
He wants mm-hmm. the exile. He wants the manager. He wants the firefighter. There's no part of you that he does not love, that he does not see, that he doesn't cherish, that he doesn't... He already knows that part of you. He already knows all these parts of you, but he wants to hear you talk about these things. That these are all gifts to him, and he's not burdened. He's not ashamed. He's not disgusted by anything that we have.
Hmm.
I mean, if we can walk away from today knowing that, I think internal family systems, you know, this whole conversation has done its job.
Yeah, really. Right.
But I think IFS is so powerful because it gives vocabulary to yeah. be able to come to that.
Yes. Yeah. No, when you said he wants to hear us talking about these things and having a vocabulary to actually approach, because I understand so fundamentally, like, Lord, I want to give you it, or I want to give you whatever's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't even know what it is mm-hmm. or where it came from or what's going on. And even in the little exposure I've had to internal family systems has begun to like affect my prayer in a way. It's like, okay, Lord, for today's prayer, I'm going to speak out of just this one part and just say like, this is what it would say to you right now, or this is what it would talk about myself if it was just in control. But not only does Christ want to hear us speak about these things, but he then wants us to sit and listen as he speaks back to us
mm-hmm.
in all of those places. Just particularly about just like the image of exile and the words exile. I just keep on, my mind keeps on going back to the book of the prophet Ezekiel in the reading that we hear at the Easter vigil, particularly where he says, I will bring you back to your own land. Mm-hmm. I will take from your bodies your stony hearts and give you natural hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, exile is the situation that the Israelites are in this moment. And Ezekiel is prophesying to them in this exile. So they are out there, right? They've felt disassociated from God because of the things that are going on inside of them. And those stony mm-hmm. hearts, I kind of, in just this part's language, kind of associate it with like one part has taken over and they've just kind of locked in as identity. And they can't feel, like a heart should, anything other than that. But he's saying, no, come back to your own land. Come back from exile, mm-hmm. all of you.
Mm-hmm.
And let me give you a natural heart that is allowed to feel all of these things, that beats as it ought to. And I will give it to you. So you don't choose which part or who is more in control. Let me tell you, mm. right? John Paul, right, says like, you know, I think it's like you are, I don't want to botch that quote, but I think you made me know it. Like you're the sum of the Father's love for you. I don't remember how it starts. Like the world tells you, you are so many things, but let me tell you who
it's
you are.
It's all starting to blend with Pope Benedict 16. But it's like, oh,
anyways,
no.
Anyways, not the greatest quote there. Yeah. All I'm saying in this mm-hmm. is like, let Christ speak into those places and invite him to speak mm-hmm. to you there. That can be probably one of the harder things because we either expect what Christ is going to say or we think like, oh, this is how he would respond because we are so used to us responding to ourselves or hearing negatively from other people. So conversation can be really positive, but at times mm-hmm. it can be very negative.
Mm-hmm.
it's like, oh, well, I've heard so many things from other people here, or I tell myself these lies all the time. But no, just saying like, Lord, tell me who I am. Tell me how you see me. And all of who I am. What do you want to speak in today? I try to start my holy hours generally with like 15 or 20 minutes of silence in that place. Like, okay, Lord, what do you want me? What do you want to remind me of who I am today?
Beautiful.
I don't always great at it. Oftentimes, he starts telling me, I'm like, ooh, you know, we could save that for like next week. But I, what has been really beautiful has been just if you're not, like him kind of maybe speaking more to that manager part. It's like, if you're not in control, it'll still be okay.
Yeah.
It'll still be okay, because guess who's actually the manager of your life? Me. Mm-hmm. And I love when I love as I manage. I don't dictate.
That's good. Yeah. And I think, I know for me, like, I really struggle with like perfectionism a lot. And that's something that over the last few years, there's been more and more freedom found in that place. But I'm going to be honest, still struggle a lot with it.
Yeah, sure.
If I'm going to do, and my name's going to be attached to something, like, it better be the best that it dang well possibly can be. And if it's not, like, I take it very personally. I'm like, oh man, like, it's not just the product that's wrong. It must be me that's wrong.
Right. Yeah.
And that identity lie of, if the thing is not perfect, then I'm not perfect, is not from God. And how long did it took me to even be able to acknowledge and say out loud, like we're talking right now, of like, I know that's not from God, but I know that that's going to be something that probably remains with me the rest of my life is a struggle. And God is not ashamed of that. He knows that I struggle a lot with perfectionism. He knows that when I go into confession, I'm confessing perfectionism in its various forms. And he's not going to be like, okay, like, you've got three more times and then I'm done forgiving you, right? Like, you know, like, no, like, every time, coming in fear and trembling sometimes, I go to confession, I go to him with these things, with these parts of myself, the shame, the fear, the anger, and I give it to him, and I'm always met with mercy. And I am the one who is surprised. He is not surprised. I am the one who's surprised.
I love that.
You know, I'm afraid, and a wise person once told me that fear is an acronym. False expectations appear real.
Ooh.
When he told me that, I was like, where did that come from? And he's like, gum. Lots of life experience there. But false expectations appear real. Like, the false expectations of who I believe God is, who I believe I should be, who I think I have to be in order to be seen and be loved and be heard by him. And that if I'm not, might as well just like kick the can down the road and just, you know, maybe continue on in a life of sin, continue on in a life of not caring, continue beating myself up, whatever, right? Like, it takes on different forms like that. But those false expectations appear real. And when I have that fear, which can drive me towards sin in all of its forms and all the ways that I struggle with my sin and engage with the unhealthy parts of me that still need to be healed. What am I met with? I'm not met by God with anything other than mercy and love, understanding and compassion. And it's not, you know, mercy in the sense of here's a pat on the back, like, don't do it.
Yeah, right, right.
But it's the mercy of the sinful woman caught in adultery. The Lord did not condemn her to death, and he doesn't condemn me to death, but he says, go and sin no more.
Yeah, yeah.
And I am the one who is always surprised by the Lord's mercy. And he never is. He's never tired of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you. Yeah, so if you maybe want to be a little bit more surprised about who you are and how God sees you, maybe take a little bit more of a deep dive into internal family systems. This is obviously like 45-minute crash course, really basic, but certainly invite you. And if you're in spiritual direction or if you're in therapy, highly encourage you to do both if you're not yet. But if you are, maybe bring this up as something. It's like, hey, and maybe your director or your therapist isn't super familiar, but it doesn't take a ton of familiarity to even be, or if you just like bring it up, it's like, hey, I would like to talk about like the different parts of myself that I think that are there.
Yeah. And I think a good resource too that our church has, and something that we had mentioned earlier, is soulsandhearts.com. It's a Catholic therapy IFS based website that Dr. Peter Malinowski and some others that we had mentioned to are with. They have tons of free resources online. They have tons of their podcasts too that go into IFS more generally. Dr. Peter Malinowski actually has a really good one where the last 5 to 10 minutes he actually goes through an exercise of what does this look like of being able to engage with the parts, what could it look like. And there's prayers, there's litanies, there's great resources. And too, there is a link there of different Catholic therapists that are familiar with IFS.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That people can look at.
Nice.
And who's in state, who's out of state, who does telehealth, who can take people outside of the state, that kind of thing.
Sweet.
So great resource, soulsandhearts.com. Highly recommend it.
Awesome. You heard it here. So
and they didn't even pay me.
Yeah. Wow, look at that. Free promotion. Free promotion.
There we go.
Well, thank you, Brother Jose.
Yes, thank
appreciate
you.
You being on here. I know I received a lot. I hope you all did. If there was something particularly that stood out to you, please leave a comment below about what you liked, or even if there's a part of you that maybe you've realized through this episode is like, oh, that maybe is dominant. Like, just maybe, you know, share or speak your experience. Because we are here, as Jose said, right, in communion, in community. And some of that speaking out could be the first step we need to take in order to begin that healing and harmony process.
Amen to that.
So, yeah, if you appreciated this episode of kind of another step of integration between psychology and spiritual direction, and you're curious about more, check out our episode that we had from Lauren. The link will be right here. And if you maybe some of those areas that we talked about with shame and guilt is kind of taking over, we also have a video talking about the distinction between guilt and shame and how to grow and recover from that. So that link will be here. So, yeah, I hope you all have a wonderful day. Thank you, Jose.
God bless.